Hey, this is Megan Rapinoe.
And I'm Sue Bird.
We've decided to turn our crazy IG live show into a podcast for your listening pleasure. Enjoy the show.
A Touch More.
New episodes of A Touch More drop Tuesday only on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to subscribe to the show on Spotify, Apple, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Sacramento. Three on one. Bagley the step. Bagley with the dunk. And you can put it in the book and send it to the left.
There it is. Buddy Hill alone at the top of the Kings record book.
Oh, I like to see Fox force five in an open court.
Fox into the lane. Oh, if you don't like that, you don't like Kings basketball.
Welcome back to another episode of the Kings Pulse Podcast. My name is Brendan Nunez. We don't have Rich Ivanowski on here today, but we have another special guest. We have Ty Ellis, who is the head coach of the Stockton Kings, the G League affiliate of the Sacramento Kings. How you doing, Ty?
Doing fine, thank you.
I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time, man. And just to start, for people that don't know who you are, can you give us a little bit of your background? My understanding is you played EuroLeague ball for a long time as well, right?
Yeah. So my name is Ty Ellis, and I'm currently the head coach for the Stockton Kings, which is the G League affiliate for the Sacramento Kings. I just completed my eighth year of professional coaching. I played for 11. I went to Southern Nazarene University, a small Christian school in Oklahoma City, and I've really been blessed and fortunate to experience the things that I have.
Definitely. And what were some of your experiences and things that you learned over playing in Europe? A lot of guys that I talk to that play over there say that it's a lot of a slower paced game, more physical in a way. Do you feel like there's things that you learned in Europe that you're able to bring to NBA ball that maybe is a little is something that you don't see if you would have just stayed in the States?
I don't think it's a slower paced game. I think you have to think more, which makes it slower for some people. I was very fortunate to play in the top leagues and in EuroLeague and all that stuff for the majority of my career. And so I absolutely loved it. More so because I came from a small school, right? And so coming from a small school, I had to really be purposeful with my actions and like intent with my thoughts to excel, right? To even get noticed, to be able to go to the ACB, you know? And so that came natural for me. So I wasn't as instinctual as some people are. And so it really taught me that European basketball is more suited for my game than the NBA, you know? And so it was perfect for me. I had some phenomenal coaches, man, some great coaches that really taught the game. And the one thing I've noticed over here is we're so athletic over here and we make so many moves or plays off of our instincts. You know, but over there, it's more methodical and you can make the same exact move, but you have an idea of what the defense will do because you've practiced every scenario, right? There's a lot more time to practice, so which we are kind of more prepared than we are in the States.
That makes sense, right? And you can't really coach those instincts, right? I mean, the what you're talking about of being able to read and react in a way is kind of what I'm getting from that is definitely a more coachable thing. And for you to transition to coaching after 11 years of playing, was that just your way of staying in the game, or what made you transition to coaching?
Well, I went to college with the mindset of coaching college. I registered my freshman year so I could get my master's paid for. And so I had always had the idea of coaching basketball. Professional basketball just kind of happened. And so I had a great senior year with really good numbers, and scouts are in the stands. And I'm asking my coach, who are they coming to see? Because I'm like averaging all these. Well, they're coming to see you. And then that's when I kind of realized that, man, so I can play pro ball. And the rest is kind of history. So I always knew I was going to coach. I didn't know that I was going to play professional basketball.
Okay, got it. And what type of player were you?
I was literally a combo guard. And when and when I say that, most agents I talk to, when they were trying to get me to look at their player, they say, well, this guy can play the one or the two. And very seldom can a guy play both, because it's a different mindset. It's a it's different responsibilities. It's totally different positions. And I was literally a combo guard. So I remember one season I played for Naples in Naples, Italy, and we were in EuroLeague, and I was the starting point guard. And then, but the following season, I went back to the ACB in Spain. I was a two guard, and so like, I really defended. That really got me my opportunities, and you know, I could jump and shoot, but what really got me noticed to get the opportunities was my defense, because I picked up full every single time. That was something that I was known for, and that gave me my shot.
Got it. And then when that transitions to coaching, do you feel more of a relatability to guys that are in that same role?
Absolutely. I understand. Anytime a player comes to me with some type of question or some type of discrepancy, or they want to challenge anything, like my first couple comments is, I understand. I really do. Right. And so me playing in Europe, me playing in the States have really helped me communicate so effectively with my players.
Right. Yeah. It makes a lot of sense. And I would assume among the guys that you're coaching, it gives you a level of respect as well. And so what was your first coaching opportunity that you got?
I retired in 2012. I tore my Achilles in May. And I was debating on going back, because I have a European passport. So I could have went back and played. And I had some offers to go back. And my wife and I talked about it. And she said, well, you're 34. And let's put out a couple of emails. And if you get an opportunity, let's go ahead and retire. And so I did that. And I got wound up getting three offers. And I chose to go to Oklahoma City to be the lead assistant for their G League team.
Okay. And then my understanding is you spent some time as an assistant coach for summer league teams in Phoenix and Sacramento. And then later in your career, you were an assistant coach in Phoenix. And like you said, you spent time in the G League. You're a head coach in Stockton right now. What do you feel like the main differences are between working as a coach in the majors of the NBA and the G League?
All right. So I want to rewind. I did do assistant with the Phoenix Suns, but I also did it in 2009 and 10 when I was still playing.
Oh, okay.
So when I was still playing, I was focusing on life after basketball. And when you're playing, like when you have a job, it's easier to get another job. And so, David Griffin and Steve Kerr were in the front office, and my agent is Bill Duffy. And so I asked Bill, could I start that process now while I'm still playing? And so he reached out to Steve, and Steve allowed me to be on Alvin Gentry's Summer League. Now, fast forward, I get hired by the Phoenix Suns to be on their Summer League, their G League head coach and assistant coach. But that relationship started maybe 5 to 7 years before I even got my shot. So the question, I forget the question again. Can you please repeat?
Yeah, what do you feel like some of the differences are working between the NBA and the G League?
Well, the NBA is so many games, and there's not that much time for practice. And that's really one of the biggest things that I've noticed. And even if you do practice, it's a condensed version, because you have – the next 3 days, you have two games. And so very seldom during the season will the schedule allow you to really have a really good practice. And not to mention the rotations are way smaller in the NBA. So if you have a guy who's averaging 30 to 38 minutes a game, 40 minutes a game, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of wear and tear on their body. So those guys really don't practice much. It's more about maintaining. Now in the G League, I literally play 10 guys. And so we practice, you know, when it's time to go to work, we work. And so we have 50 games, and sometimes the schedule gets hectic, but every opportunity we get, we touch the court. And it may be something as simple, let's have a good stretch, put up shots for an hour, no physical play, and then leave. But every single time, every single opportunity we get, we touch the court. And I couldn't do that in the NBA.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. And, you know, but obviously before Gatorade took over, it was the D League, it was the development league. So how do you balance, because obviously at the same time, you're trying to win as many games as possible. How do you balance developing these guys and focusing on winning?
I really don't focus on winning, to be honest with you. Like, winning is a byproduct of the hard work that we put in. It's obvious that everybody wants to win. That's not something that – so I don't have to focus on it because we play the game to win. So I really don't focus on winning. I focus on development. I focus on the mental side just as much as I do the physical side of development. And in my experience, I've been able to really gain equity with the players and trust. So when I coach them hard, I've spent so much time loving them and teaching them that they know it comes from a good place, right? And so, and I teach, you know, my staff and I, we teach the why first, the how what, and the how second, and the what third. And we teach in that order, right? The why is so important, man. Why do we do this? Back in the day when I played, the head coach would tell us something to do, and we did it without asking questions. But that's not the case anymore. These young men are more knowledgeable. They have more access to the game than what we did growing up. So they want to know why. And I don't have a problem explaining the why. And now I teach. And then secondly, I teach the how. And then thirdly, this is what we're going to do. And that has worked very well for me. And so if I have to, if I sub a guy out, he already knows why, because we've talked about it. And right. So I tell him, if you come out as a professional and get ready to go back in, but do not come out sulking, complaining. That's going to keep you on the bench.
Right. There is no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partner, BetOnline. NASCAR is back, and BetOnline has hundreds of other games, events, and sports to get in on. You can still bet on simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC events 24/7. Or you can participate in a $10,000 Madden Bracket Challenge, a March Madness-style NFL simulation tournament you can enter for free. And coming up next Sunday, BetOnline has ex-Chicago Bulls Horace Grant, Bill Cartwright, and Craig Hodges joining them to discuss the Michael Jordan documentary on what they're calling After the Dance. Visit betonline.ag and use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus and check out all the action. BetOnline, your online wagering solution. And it's kind of a tricky situation because you have guys that are on different contracts, you know, like the Sacramento roster is obviously focusing on these two-way guys with for Stockton. We're talking Kyle Guy and Daquan Jeffries, and say they send some guys down, you know, maybe Harry Giles goes down there, spends some time. Is that a tricky situation to navigate with some guys' minutes being fluctuated by people being sent down? And do you feel like it's different conversations with different guys, or do you try to treat everyone that's there just as the same person? You know, you're just a part of the roster.
It's not difficult for me because I'm honest. Like, part of Kyle Guy's and or part of the development of any guy that is assigned to us, I don't like to say sit down because it has such a negative connotation to it.
Right.
But anybody who is assigned to us, part of their development is being held accountable. And so if you go in the game and just do what you want to do, I'm as a head coach, I'm doing you a disservice because you won't be able to do that when you go back to the NBA team. And so everybody is held accountable to the same level. Now, I would like to thank Coach Luke and the front office and my GM for allowing me to coach that way, because it's not like that on most G League teams. You know, some coaches are handcuffed. This guy has to play 30 minutes or 35 minutes regardless. And I do not agree with that, because that guy knows that, the team knows that, and you start to lose equity and trust with the entire organization.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if the guys deserve the minutes, they get it. I definitely see where you're coming from there. And yeah, I want to touch on your interaction, like you were talking about with Luke and the other guys in the Sacramento front office. How often are you guys communicating, and what is that situation like? And you said it sounds like that obviously varies team to team, right?
Yeah, man, I've been on teams, man, where it's been horrible, and I've been on teams where it's been great. And Luke has come in with an open arms regarding the G League, with an open mind and a level of trust. And I respect that a lot. And I appreciate that a lot as well. During the preseason and veterans camp, I'm an extension of Luke's staff. When the season starts, obviously he's busy doing his thing and I'm busy doing my thing, but I'm welcome with open arms, and Luke expects me to obviously do what they do, but also do what I do best. And Luke gives me the freedom to have my own plays, to have, better yet, to put my stamp on the Stockton Kings. But also, if somebody is assigned, they can come in immediately and be effective. And so it's a real good synergy at this point with the Stockton Kings and the Sacramento Kings.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And obviously, you know, letting you do what – I mean, you're in place there to do with running that team and having that bit of freedom definitely sounds like it would be beneficiary to you and all the guys that are on that roster. And to touch on Guy and Jeffries a little bit, if you can, is there certain aspects of their game that you've been – that they and you collectively have been working on to improve? It seems like – correct me if I'm wrong – like Guy has had a lot of ball handling responsibilities, I felt like, that maybe he didn't have previously. Is there certain aspects of their game that you guys had been focusing on this year?
Yeah, yes, Kyle learning to play the point, not be a point, but just play the point position, and also his defense. And I think Kyle has improved tremendously in those two areas specifically. Kyle is obviously a phenomenal scorer. You know, he doesn't need much help knowing how to score. His difference from college and pros is understanding angles and the setup. You know, so many young players, they want to dribble the ball until, you know, for 7 seconds without doing anything. Mm-hmm. So offensively, I wanted to teach him how to be more effective and use angles and his body to set up his man as opposed to his dribble. And then defensively, learning how to hit and not get hit. That's a skill, because he doesn't have a big, strong body, but his mind is his weapon. And if he's proactive defensively, he can learn how to hit and not get hit. And so, to Kyle's credit, there were times, man, where I coached him hard. There were times where I benched him, and he remained a consummate professional through all of it. And so, hats off to him. I'm really hoping that he has a long NBA career. And DJ played the four in college. And so his mannerisms, his movements, the small nuances of a wing are totally different as a four. And that's what he has to continue to develop on. I think he did a really good job with showing off his athleticism, and boy, can he shoot the ball. I did not realize how much of a shooter DJ is. He shot the ball extremely well, and he improved with his wing ability offensively and defensively.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't want to overlook the rest of the guys on the roster as well, just because those are the two ways. I just want to, you know, if there's anything that you want to get out there on any of the other guys on this roster that you maybe feel like are a little overlooked by the people that aren't spending time watching every single Stockton game, which, by the way, the games are extremely entertaining. The stadium's great and everything. So people, anybody that's not keeping up, you should. But yeah, I mean, there's plenty of other talented guys on this roster, obviously. Sacramento's own Cody Demps. There's Isaiah Cannon, Gabe Vincent obviously ended up getting picked up by Miami. But can you just touch on a little bit of the rest of the roster you got going on too?
Yeah, man, there were times the majority of the season we played with 7 and 8 players because the Kings had injuries. So Cal and DJ were with them a lot. And then Hollis Thompson and Tyler Ulis, they took up 2 of our spots with because they came in the season injured and they didn't play until February, right? And then our center tore his meniscus in training camp. So we started off the season, you know, with 7 guys and then Kyle and DJ going up and down. And we still held the number one position for the entire year in our division. And mostly because of guys like Gabe Vincent, Eric Mika, Cody Demps. You know, Gabe Vincent averaged, I want to say, 9 to 10 points around that last year. Didn't play much at all. Didn't have he was injured a lot last season. Didn't make anybody's summer league team last year. But I literally saw him work every single day, Monday through Friday, in the gym with the gentleman by the name of Gus Armstead. That's his sack. He worked his butt off, and he was so focused. And so people, the different scouts kept asking me, where did this kid come from? I said, no, he was here last year. You guys didn't recognize him last year. You know, and for him to – when he left us, he was averaging 24 points, 89% from the free throw line, 48% from the field, and 41% from three.
Yeah, on crazy volume from three, too.
Yeah, he was averaging 11 threes a game while shooting 41. And so that's a testament to the staff, to the organization, but most importantly to Gabe's work ethic and his focus. And so we had guys like that, man. Isaiah Cannon, he came in with so much humility, just worked his tail off, man. Isaiah Pinero, he's from the Stockton area. I mean, the Sacramento area. He came in as a rookie and worked really hard. And so, man, we from top to bottom, everybody played their part, and everybody had their responsibility to help us win, and they did that.
Yeah, definitely, and credit to those guys and yourself as well for allowing all that to happen. And there's a lot of changes going on with the G League in regards to obviously mainly looking at these draft prospects that are choosing to go to the G League rather than the NCAA. And what do you feel like are some of the positives of this? And then if you feel like there's areas of concern as well, like all these guys are going to be on the same team. My understanding is maybe they got a little bit of a different schedule. What is your reactions to these new developments that's going to be going on next year?
I don't have not one negative thing to say about it. I do want to praise Sharif Abdul-Rahim, our president, for being innovative and providing different solutions outside of the norm. These young men will be on the same team, but there's only going to be, I think, 3 to 5 of them, right? And then the rest of the roster will be filled with seasoned veterans, right? They're going to have an experienced NBA coach. They're going to have the best facilities and living accommodations, and they'll also have an opportunity to take online classes if they choose to. Not to mention they're getting paid a hefty salary, right? And so commend the NBA and the G League for putting this model together. They won't play 50 games. They'll play, I believe, 28 maybe. They'll play everybody once. I think that was the rumor going around. I'm not 100% sure about that, but they won't play 50. And so they will really have a chance to develop and nurture and be ready for the following year. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Right, definitely. And it brings more eyes to the talent that's already been in the G League, sitting on your roster and throughout the rest of the league. And then also, can you just touch on, it seems like because of this, or maybe it was bound to happen no matter, it seems like there's some quality of life improvements that have been happening as well, like the guys getting their own hotel rooms when they're going out and things like that, right?
Yeah, I heard that rumor. I'm not sure how, if it's confirmed or not, but the progression of the G League started with Malcolm Farmer, the president before Sharif. And after Malcolm left, Sharif took the G League by the horns and just kept on going with it. Not to mention, Sharif was the GM of the Reno Bighorns before he took the job. So Sharif has a great understanding of where we were lacking. And man, he just stepped in and just did it. So I'm very proud of him and his staff and what they're doing.
Guys, looking to last longer and go a few extra rounds? Get to BlueChew.com. BlueChew.com has the first ever chewable that brings your performance in the bedroom to another level. They've got the same active ingredients that are in Viagra and Cialis, so you know they work. And since they're chewable, they work faster. You can take them anytime, day or night, and even on a full stomach. Plus, you don't need to go to the doctor's office or spend time waiting in the pharmacy line. BlueChew's online physician is free of cost, and once approved, your order ships straight to your door in discreet packaging. Here's a great deal for you guys. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first order free when you use promo code BLUEWIRE. All you gotta do is pay $5 shipping. Again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code BLUEWIRE to get your first order free. One of the last things I got for you is, can you give a little bit of insight to what the travel is like of the G League? Because my understanding is that it can definitely be wearing, just like it can for the NBA. But what is the difference like in that travel, and how taxing is it on you and the rest of the guys on the roster?
I mean, it's we fly commercial, you know, whatever professional team you're with. And whatever sport, is difficult because you're traveling consistently. Only difference is we fly commercial, and it can be taxing. There are certain parts of the season where I'll give you an example. We flew into Toronto and played Toronto. The following day, we leave at 5:30 in the morning because we play in Delaware that same day. So we get to the – and it's during the winter, so our flight was delayed. So we get to the hotel at 1, I believe, 1, and the bus is at 3:30. Wow. And so we have to take a two-hour eat and take a nap within those 2 hours to get up and play on a back-to-back. And ironically, we won both of those games. But then again, there's times where we play Monday and don't play again until the following Tuesday. And the reason being, we don't own our gyms. The majority of the G League teams don't own the gyms. And so there's concerts and other things that the gym have already dated for. And so every part of the season, sometimes it's difficult, sometimes it's easy, but it is taxing on the players. You know, I'm not going to lie, because you have 6'9", 6'8" guys sitting coach, and some people aren't as accommodating. And so you have 6'10" Eric Mika sitting middle on a Southwest flight.
Right.
You know, but you know, that's difficult, but you get used to it, man. And you, the the G League, if you go into it with an attitude of gratitude, none of that stuff even matters, because there are so many people that want our positions. You know, we don't do much complaining.
Right. Yeah. It's similar to, I talked to Grant Napier yesterday and, you know, saying, yeah, no matter if the team is successful or not, I'm one of 30 jobs going on here. And there's a few more, obviously you're talking about, a different level, but it's obviously extremely comparable. And like you said, there's only so many spots. Definitely reason to be gracious or grateful of what you got. And the last thing I got for you, Ty, is just, what is your ultimate goal, man? Like, are you trying to work your way up to being a head coach yourself in the NBA eventually?
You know, this answer is going to sound very cliche-ish, but it's so true with me. Wherever God wants me to go, that's where I will go. And when I first, and the reason being, when I first got into coaching, my goal was to make it to the NBA. I retired in 2012, and I had these goals in 5 years. I had three goals in 5 years: to be a G League head coach, mm-hmm. to coach in the NBA, and to work with USA Basketball. And by the grace of God, I was able to accomplish all those things in 5 years. And when I got to the NBA, I thought I was at the pinnacle, right? And then the 8 months or 9 months later, we all get fired. Now, imagine this. I'm in the G League as the head coach. 1 year, and we do great. The next year, the Suns fire the head coach the day before my training camp starts, and they bring me up. And then I have as an assistant coach under Jay Triano. Very, very thankful for Jay. Jay was awesome. And so we wound up, you know, not having a good year because of the situation was really bad in Phoenix. Mm-hmm. So circle back. I mean, fast forward to June. I get a call saying that I'm getting fired, basically. And I asked them, well, is there something I did wrong? They said, no, the owner wants anybody affiliated with the previous staff just gone. We want a clean slate. And I say, well, I wasn't with the previous staff. You guys brought me up. Oh, yeah. I say, you know what? It's okay. But that right there, it taught me a lesson that I gave them way more of me than they deserved, right? I didn't spend the right amount of time studying my word. Mm-hmm. I was negligent to my family. I'm spending 13-hour days, man, at the gym and doing work. And then for what? For them just to fire me. And so right then and there, I recommitted myself to God and my family. So if God wants me in the G League next year, I'm cool with it. If God wants me in the NBA, okay, let's go. But if God wants me out of the basketball, okay, well, show me what you want. And with that mindset, I have peace. I'm not trying to meet the right person. I'm not stressing if I see something online or on TV. If somebody else gets a job that I think I deserve, you know, I'm not worried about that stuff anymore. But before, that stuff would stress me out. But now I'm happy and I got peace. And so whatever happens, happens. I know that I'm a good coach. I know that I'm a good person. And Herm Edwards told me this when I was in Phoenix. He said, never be afraid to be you. If you get fired, guess what? You're going to find another job. And it's that simple. And so that meant the world to me.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a great outlook to have on everything, man. Just focus on what you got in front of you and whatever, whatever comes up, man. And I can't thank you enough, Ty, for coming on, man. I don't know if there's anything else you feel like you want to get out, but again, just thank you so much for taking the time out of your day, man.
Yeah, man. I personally want to thank the Stockton fans, man. The last 2 years have been phenomenal. These fans are great. They contact me on Twitter and Instagram all the time. And I'm so thankful, man. And on behalf of the Stockton Kings and all of our players, thank y'all very much, man. And just keep on supporting.
Yeah, and thanks to you and all the players for being a form of entertainment for everybody in the city, man. I know everybody appreciates it. And thanks to everybody for listening to this episode of the King's Pulse Podcast. You'll hear from us again in the next couple of days.